Hey there, this is Seth Wars from Channel 9 coming to you from the beautiful That Conference stage here in Wisconsin Dells. If you're in the Midwest, I've heard that this is the place you go to when you were a kid.
Lots of cheese curds here, I've heard.
Did you come here when you were a kid? You're from Texas.
No, it's about 1,500 miles away, so it's a bit far for a drive.
You hitchhike, man. When you're a kid, you got to have like an experience as a child. You didn't do it?
No, not exactly.
That explains a lot. This is the awesome Jimmy Bogard. You probably know him. Tell us what you do, my friend.
I'm the chief architect at a consulting company called Headspring in Austin, Texas.
That's fantastic. And the reason why I like talking to Jimmy is because sometimes I talk to people that like make the technology and they have a good idea on how it should be used. And then I like, for the most part, talking to people that are like, now that we've taken this, here's how the rubber hits the road. And he is a rubber man.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you do a lot of projects, right?
I do. And a lot of stuff I do is about, you know, like half open source stuff, just trying to make our teams move faster and be better. Mm-hmm. And the other half is just actually helping our teams build stuff.
But you also, the thing about that I like is you do a lot of open source things, but it's not like, you're not like, today I'm going to build an open source project that everyone's going to love. How do you go about open source?
It's a very, very long process. So almost all my projects are things that have been extracted out of actually real-world projects that we do.
Sure.
So that I can then take that and use it on the next project.
Right.
A couple times I haven't followed my own advice and hasn't gone well because they weren't real projects that I was pulling them from. They were just experiments.
Sure.
So I try as much as possible to make my open source be something that's actually from a real project that I use in the real world.
So one of the ones that I've seen, and a long time ago, I was writing an open source library as well, where I needed to get one object that didn't look like this other object to be like the same object, and I started writing this thing, and I'm like, this is ridiculously hard. Thank goodness you wrote something that already does that, right?
Yeah, it was, again, part of a real project that we were following this pattern of having every single screen have its own view model instead of having the entities go through. And we're about to start a project that had hundreds of screens. So we're like, no way we're going to do this manually. So, you know, a few weeks cobbled together something that was the beginnings of AutoMapper. And that was like 7 or 8 years ago.
It's been around a long time.
A very, very long time, yeah.
And you say that with like some tiredness.
Well, I mean, it's like just like if you look at code you wrote 7, 8 years ago, you probably don't like it very much.
No, it's like you know that you know where all the skeletons are, right?
Yes, and unfortunately, the skeletons seem to be things people actually depend on these days with a project that long. So when you have something like that, you have to worry about, you know, breaking people that rely on just things that you know are really bad things inside.
So the reason why I have you on, I was at ChefConf a couple weeks ago, and I had lunch with you, and you're like, oh, there's a new version of AutoMapper. I don't know if we even said that's what the name is. It's AutoMapper.
Yeah.
AutoMapper is out, and I said, well, are you going to be at that conference? He said, yeah. I said, well, let's talk about the new version of AutoMapper. What are some cool things that are in there, and then what should people look out for that, like, oh, I should totally use that. But maybe for those that don't know AutoMapper, just a quick sort of summary.
Okay, well, its whole purpose in life is to be an object-to-object mapper. So taking one object and mapping it to another. Mm-hmm. Its biggest goal is to have the kind of subset sort of mapping that you would do, like you're mapping a subset of properties from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it's meant for.
And it works, right?
It's worked for us anyway.
So is there like a problem when it comes to like speed? I mean, because I feel like...
So there used to be. So that was one of the big, like the skeletons in the closet way back in the day. When I first was creating AutoMapper, one of the things I did was try to make it super easy to use. And part of it was just having these really simple methods like create map from A to B.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I made it all static, like all the configuration was static configuration. And within the first 2 weeks, I think, my boss at the time came up to me and said, I love what you're doing, Jimmy, but maybe you should not make it static. And my reaction was, whatever.
Sure.
What does he know? And so I've actually paid for that over and over and over again in the terms of speed, because people could change configuration at any time, at any point in time. So every time I would execute the actual mapping, I had to check all the configuration options you can possibly set every single freaking time, which made it pretty slow. In fact, if you go to like Stack Overflow, there's like a lot of questions like, why is AutoMapper so slow? And with 5.0, I'm happy to say that we fixed all of those speed problems.
And 5.0 is the one that just came out.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember when exactly. It's been kind of a blur. with getting that release out. But yeah, sure. that was the big one for us.
So the first thing that you're going to notice is speed, and why is that?
Well, internally, what I've done is, and not just me as well, this is a big community contribution as well. I made the very last release of the previous version be one where I obsoleted all of the APIs that allowed you to change configuration at will. And then the new API said, I gather all the configuration once, and that's it. And so with 5.0, what we've done is taken all the configuration and build expression trees for the complete mapping strategy based on your configuration.
And these are they compiled expression
and
trees?
And then we compile the expression trees, so it's as little code as possible for each individual mapping for everything in your system.
And I will tell you, like I said, the library I write requires you to get a hot path to properties,
mm-hmm.
and literally you build an expression that you compile and you save in a dictionary. That's what I did.
That's pretty much what we do now as well.
and it's just fast, right?
Yeah. One of the things we wanted to do, though, was preserve all the other good stuff that came out of AutoMapper. Like, let's say I'm going navigating a set of paths, like A.B.C.D.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to make sure that if any of those properties are null, that you don't get blown up with a null reference exception.
Right.
So one of the things we do is make sure we check all along the way that you don't have a null property and then return the right thing at the end.
And so this brings an interesting question that may not have anything to do with the 5.0 release. Because when I was doing these things, I was projecting from one object flat to another object flat.
Mm-hmm.
AutoMapper can do more than that, right?
Yeah. So one of the things we wanted to do was have some simple conventions so that if I flatten my object that's complicated, like A.B.C.E, I can flatten into an object that just has A.B.C.D.E
uh-huh.
as a property name. So if you imagine a really complicated navigation path,
uh-huh.
if I just remove all the dots, then I should have I can have a property name that is that, and it'll map to it just fine.
That's amazing.
That was like the big thing for us was not to have duplicate or sort of objects back and forth, but
uh-huh.
actually allow us to flatten and simplify our DTOs.
So the first thing you talked about is you said that the new release has better speed
mm-hmm.
because you remove the ability to hot swap configurations. It seems like it's an anti-pattern to swap configurations during runtime. I mean, is it?
Yeah. I never did that, but I guess people did. That was one of the problems I had with the static configuration is even though I had sort of my best practices, because the API kind of allowed you to do anything,
yeah.
people did anything. And
yeah.
I found out about that after I released and had all these issues of, how do I convert this set of code? I'm like, uh-oh, you're using it wrong. So that's most of my issues now are just correcting, okay, this is how you should be using it because the API didn't enforce a good way to use it before 5.0.
So the first thing was the notion of speed, a single configuration at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Did you remove all the static stuff?
No, I didn't. I did for like one little release, like a dot release, and then I put it back in like the next dot release, realizing that that would be really painful to remove all of that. So the idea is that you can use either an instance-based version of it or a static-based version of it, but either way, it's a one-time configuration and then you use the mappings over and over again.
So if you were to build a new project from scratch, would you go static or instance-based?
Probably instance-based. But one of the problems with instance-based is AutoMapper has pretty extensive usage of extensions through link and extension methods.
Right.
And extension methods don't really have like a way you can hook into them to do stuff. So it actually does help if you have something static, because if I want to do an extension method, which I'll be showing here in a little bit,
uh-huh.
the only way you can pass in configuration is through some either instance variable or through some static variable that it knows where to look for.
I see. So let's talk about sort of the new features now.
Sure. So probably the biggest features I have are nothing you can see, and it's all about speed. That's one of the things I did for the 5.0 release.
Okay.
So it's nothing actually anyone ever would see other than underneath the covers. It's between 20 and 50 times faster than it was
goodness.
In the previous version. And we do benchmarks pretty heavily now, like every single pull request and every single commit to the master branch runs benchmarks as well. So I can actually track performance over time to make sure no one makes it worse and it only gets better or stays the same, I should say.
All right, so let's see if we can get the screen. Are we good on the screen right now? Okay, I'm not seeing it here. Hopefully I'll be able to see it. They're saying they can see it, so.
I think I unplugged the cable accidentally.
Oh, no.
Slightly.
But you can see it, right? Okay, I'll just look on your screen, man.
All right. So what I'm showing here, this is an ASP.NET MVC Core application.
Okay.
And one of the kind of cool things with MVC Core is it has a built-in dependency injection container.
Right, and that's what I was going to ask. Because now when you're doing instance space, you can pass an instance around of the configuration that knows about all the mappings.
Exactly. So what I did was I created a new NuGet package as an extension to the Microsoft dependency injection package, mm-hmm. so you can really easily add AutoMapper to your application. And let me pull up the project JSON just to show you what I have installed as NuGet packages. All right, so down here, I've got the AutoMapper library, mm-hmm. and because I'm the AutoMapper developer, I'm okay with running off the very bleeding edge.
Of course.
And then what we have here is the AutoMapper extensions for Microsoft Dependency Injection. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if that name looks long, that's the name that the Microsoft people recommended. So
dang,
you have only your coworkers to blame for this, by the way.
I will talk to, we're looking at you.
So this is some extensions on top of the Microsoft Dependency Injection framework to make it really easy for you to add AutoMapper configuration and initialize it from inside any application that uses that dependency injection, which MVC Core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so what it means in my startup for MVC Core, to add AutoMapper, it's just as easy as this services.addAutoMapper in your configure services method. We have everything else.
I see why it needs to be named that way. It's because you're adding sort of an extension method onto something that we already have.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So I've been really hesitant to try to do things like this for all the different containers out there because, I don't know, there's like a dozen or something.
Yeah, sure.
But something like this where it's built in, it just makes sense. Yeah. So to get it added to your application, try to make it as easy as possible.
And like I've learned from you over time, it's like, the new shiny is not always the best in practice. Mm-hmm. You should go with what's in there mm-hmm. and then only take it out when it's not working for you anymore.
Right, exactly, okay. Exactly. So what I've got here is I'm telling this method to scan specific assemblies for AutoMapper configuration. Mm-hmm. That's just so I don't scan every single assembly loaded. You probably don't scan like system.dll for AutoMapper configuration.
No.
So I said go ahead and scan this assembly for any AutoMapper configuration. And then just to make sure nothing is incorrect, I have this mapper.assert configuration is valid.
I've seen that. What does that actually do? Does that say? Does that just check that the types can actually exist or can map to each other?
Well, this is a method that you shouldn't. This is a method that if you, let me write this right away. If you're using AutoMapper, you need to be calling this method somewhere, whether it's a unit test or at your startup. You need to be calling this. And what it's doing is analyzing all of your configuration and making sure that, based on some simple rules, that everything matches up.
Okay.
Now, let's say you have a bunch of code that does manual mapping, this left-hand side, right-hand side code. If you were to do something like delete a property or rename something, you would immediately get a compilation error.
Sure.
With something like AutoMapper, because it just has some inferred mappings back and forth, I need to have some confidence that things actually map correctly.
Okay.
And so what this is doing is it's really just checking all of the destination types to make sure all of those properties are mapped.
Okay.
It just assumes that everything that I'm trying to map to needs to have some sort of mapping configuration for it. Now, some people do this at startup of their application. I guess they like to, they like to do it live or whatever, just have something blow up immediately. We typically do it as part of a unit test, though.
So right now, when you're doing add AutoMapper, the type of startup allows you to pull the assembly out of that type. And
right.
Then do the scanning for it. Is there a way to just say, I have a class that does the configuration?
This one lets you pass in a number of different options, like these are the assemblies to go from, these are the marker types to go from. And if I want to just instantiate it or initialize it directly, I can just do mapper.initialize. Mm-hmm. And this is my configuration I can then pass in.
Okay.
So what this is doing, though, behind the scenes is not only scanning your assemblies for AutoMapper configuration, it's also configuring the container. So if they want to actually depend on the instance-based version, like an iMapper instance, it'll do that. So, for example.
I see. Because it's like Katana, old school Katana-based, you can actually inject that stuff into the pipeline and have everything injected into your services. Am I getting it right?
Exactly. So my controller, for example, if I want to depend on an iMapper instance, well, you can do that now because I've configured the container to configure that iMapper instance to be the correct one from AutoMapper initialization.
Nice.
Or you can just use the static one. It's really kind of up to you.
Which one would you suggest? It doesn't matter at this point?
When I first created the instance-based version, I thought it would be way more correct, I should say, to use the instance-based version. But actually, it's kind of a hassle, it turns out. So I, in practice, actually just use the static one all the time.
Okay.
The only reason I'd see that people would want to use the instance-based version is that they really need to have different configuration options for different things. But with this case, it's super easy for me to still use the static version and still have and inject an instance. If you wanted to like unit test this or mark it out for whatever reason, that's still possible for you to do.
In the end, is the instance-based version just calling the static methods?
No, the other way around. The static version is doing is just keeping a couple static fields around for the configuration and mapping things.
Makes sense.
And just kind of wrapping it.
Got it.
It used to be the only way to use it was through the static way, and now the previous version and this one have made it so that the static one is simply a very transparent pass-through to an instance.
And is it using like the singleton kind of patterns? So
exactly.
Only one? Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So I've got my configuration here. This student profile, this is a class that contains AutoMapper configuration. We have some kind of basic configuration here where I'm mapping some domain objects into some DTOs. Some of the interesting ones are something like going to the student details model. This one actually has a collection of objects.
Right.
So AutoMapper is able to go and pull out those collections and map them correctly at runtime. It also does flattening as well. One of the ones we could see there would be, I don't know if I have any of those here, actually. Nope, that's not one. Maybe this one? Nope, I don't have an example of that.
But flattening is when you have a hierarchy, like a property is an object that has properties underneath it, and you try to sort of put it all into one.
I lied. I do have one.
Oh, okay.
Enrollment. So I was looking at the right one.
Nice.
See, you were so handsome, you were distracting me.
Yeah, it's what it is, man. I got to turn it down for you, Jimmy.
Okay, so this one, I've got a top-level student details model. That's mapped from student.
Mm-hmm.
The student object has a list of enrollments, and then the enrollment has, if I go to the enrollment, an enrollment in the Entity Framework model has a course association on it.
Mm.
But what I've done in my DTO is I just have course title. So what that's doing is pulling down the title property of the course object and setting that as the value we have here.
Are you like scanning the actual objects to find the actual mapping? Because I don't see any configuration that says go into the sub object to pull it out.
No, so in my AutoMapper configuration, this is the one that has the flattening.
Uh-huh.
It just knows to go dig down into child objects for sub-properties to map them up to the top-level ones.
I see. And is that when you're doing the assert configuration is valid, is it just making sure that those paths exist?
Yeah, it's making sure that every single destination property has some sort of mapping definition associated with it.
I see. And that's when it's going and looking. And if it's not in the top one, it's going to go into the child object.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, you may see some funny things like this where it says member list at source. And what I'm doing there is telling AutoMapper that during configuration validation, don't look at this destination object for the properties to assert against. Look at the source list of properties to assert against. This is because the student create model is a DTO for creating some object. So it's got a subset of properties for the overall domain object.
Mm-hmm.
So I only want to assert those subset of properties, have mappings, not the big domain object that has tons of properties on it, collections and all this sort of stuff.
So,
I only want to assert those little bitty things that I have for the
I see. So you're going from student create. Oh, I see. So this is the view where you're creating a student,
mm-hmm.
but the student table might have N number of fields, but
exactly.
you only want to get their first name, last name to
exactly.
start, and then you want to be able to say, hey, look, it's the source that's important. Make sure the stuff is there.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
So you want to see some usages of it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I got a couple different usages that I have going on here. One is the kind of interesting one that we see right here. So if I was doing a regular sort of projection inside of link,
uh-huh.
I would do something like dot select.
Right.
S goes to new student index model. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to pass in all of those properties that I have here.
Correct.
First min name equals S dot first min name, et
cetera,
et cetera, et cetera.
Dude, you're making me angry. This is the code we all write that we hate.
Well, what this projection does is analyze the AutoMapper configuration to build a link select expression to then pass along to your query provider.
I see, because then you might have a select n plus 1 problem if you're getting into sub-children.
Exactly.
Especially if you're with lazy loading, for example.
Exactly. So this takes care of all that select projection. that most people don't actually use for regular link. They usually just map straight to their entities and their entities to through AutoMapper.
Right.
And that can have the, like you said, the select n plus one problems, because if there's a collection there, it's iterating through every single one, potentially making a database call. And what this projection does is actually skip all of that and pass that expression tree down to your query provider. So that results in a SQL statement that only includes those properties that you're projecting.
That's
to.
That's amazing.
Skips the entities altogether.
How did you do, because I don't know if you've tried this at home, but building expression trees is a bear.
It is. I say it's not as bad as like reflection emit, but it's pretty bad.
Reflection emit is like you're getting eaten by the bear, right?
Exactly. I actually looked at Roslyn as a means to make this more easily debuggable. But right now, Roslyn doesn't support all the platforms that I want to support with AutoMapper.
I see.
So I'd have to have basically two pipelines, and it's enough to support one expression tree. I don't really want to support Roslyn's expression.
So for those that didn't understand, what I'm getting is that the project two isn't just sort of taking the object that's been fetched and then doing a mapping. It's actually going further down the pipe, getting an expression that the link provider can create like a select statement that goes directly to your database for just the things you want. So for example, in that example of the, we don't have that many objects in the student create view model, right? When you're fetching, you're only going to get those exact view model properties that you want.
Exactly.
And those are the only ones you're going to select.
So this one, for example, the student details model, this is the one that had more complicated stuff, the enrollments as part of that. Now, if you were using just entities, you'd have to use that, I think the include syntax with any framework to make sure you go ahead and fetch those other things. This one's using Entity Framework Core, which I don't even know has that feature yet.
I think, oh yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's something like, I think it's also dot include. Maybe. No, I don't know. Maybe it's there, maybe it's not. What this will do is, because the select expression includes the entire graph of things you want to retrieve, it still issues one SQL statement down to SQL Server, and it's still able to pull that data back and recreate the DTO objects that you're interested in SQL statement. And
it's
no
like AutoMapper.
Include ORM junk whatsoever.
It's like AutoMapper is like your magic shovel that's just digging out what you need. Has it ever been called that? Well, are you going to change the logo to a magic shovel?
You know, people actually have called it magic, but usually in a derogatory term because they don't understand what's going on. So this is one of those. This is one of the things that is, it seems magical, but if you understand what's going on behind the scenes, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, the thing about it is that it makes your code very tight.
Yes.
Like, it's very tight. You could see, like, right away, you're trying to get the details of some student, and if there's nothing, it's a bad request. You've pulled the one exact one you want. If it's null, it's not there, and then you just it's really tight.
Exactly. So I pretty much every single one of our projects at Headspring uses AutoMapper. It's not something that I just made up for my own purposes. We've used it for years and years on, you know, dozens of projects. To really put it through the paces. So we're pretty happy with it, at least.
Shoot, I need to start doing that. So look, I think we're nearly out of time. Anything you want to add?
Probably the biggest thing is to download 5.0 and try it out, especially if you're having performance issues with previous versions. This one right now is only slightly slower than the code you'd write yourself. And if you're using things like the link projection, it'd probably be faster than what you write yourself.
Of course.
Because it's going down to the SQL and writing optimized SQL there.
And is this on Net Standard now?
It is. I support, Net Standard 1.1, 1.3 because stupid reasons. And then I still have to support Pickles.
What's Pickles?
Oh, that's the portable class libraries.
Oh, of course.
Pickles.
Pickles.
For Nuget.
Yeah, for Nuget, yes. My pronunciation is horrible, folks. So this is awesome. So look, this is great. There was another project I want to talk to you about, maybe on another video we need to schedule for Mediator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Because I actually started trying to use it, and I got lost.
Okay.
And so you're going to have to help us go down the pipe. Because I think, like, look, if you're looking at doing, like, normal programming and not just, like, the theoretical, like, I'm going to move to microservice, all the things. if you're going to do something that a customer wants, there's some really neat things that Jimmy and his company have been doing, so you should look at that. And what's the website? AutoMapper.
Yes. AutoMapper.org. There's not very much there, but mainly the stuff is on the wiki.
Okay.
We also have some cool videos about basically walking through how to do all this sort of stuff. That's on 11xengineering.com. We got some training videos.
We just made a video right now, Jimmy.
Oh, that's true.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for your time. Again, we are here at the Kalahari Resort for that conference in Madison. Not Madison. Wisconsin Dells.
Wisconsin Dells.
Wisconsin. Thanks
Home
for watching.
Home of the Crocs.
Thanks for watching. My name is Seth Juarez of Channel 9, and we'll see you next time. Take care.